Welcome to the 43rd and final and bumper episode of the sixth season of the Ubuntu podcast. It's Wednesday, the 18th of December, and we're going to discuss what's been happening in the news and in the Ubuntu community. We'll look back at the predictions we made for 2013 and see if they came true. Short answer. And make some predictions for 2014 because we just haven't learned. In response to popular demand, there will be a quiz. Because it's Christmas. And we'll read your feedback. If you're listening or watching live, you can actually see our faces. You can send us messages using the chat facility on the website and in the IRC channel. I'm Tony, and joining me this week are the regular Ubuntu podcast family of Laura.
Hello.
Mark.
Hello.
And Alan.
Hello.
So, Alan, what have you been playing with recently?
My kids are off on Christmas holiday. And when in the evening after they've
come home,
after I've finished work, I was going to say after they come home from school, but they're broken up from school. I've finished work, they asked me if we can play games because the games console's in my office, and so I've been playing Ouya, crowdfunded games console that
runs Android, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Yes.
I seem to remember you were a little scathing about it when we talked about it on the podcast.
Yeah, it wasn't brilliant, but there's a couple of games on there which are just superb for multiplayer, especially for the kids. There's one called Towerfall with little characters. It's a static screen and you jump around and fire arrows at each other. And it's really simple, really frenetic, and it's really hilarious fun for my kids.
Have they taught you how to play it yet?
Well, they tend to gang up on me, which, seems fair.
Understandable.
Yeah. That and another one called Bomb something, I can't remember. But I've had it for a few months, and I just this week paid for my first games. Because the whole thing is they're free to play. Mm. But then they either time out or you need to pay for extra levels or something like that. And I only this week gave some money to the developers to buy the games.
Presumably, you paid for the thing in the first place.
Oh, yes, I paid for the console. But the promise was always all the games are free for a limited time. But, so those two games, bought those. And me and the kids have been, playing quite a lot of Ouya.
Bonding over the Ouya.
Yes.
Excellent. How about you, Mark? Have you been up to anything fun?
I installed SteamOS.
Oh, right, yeah, I know all about that.
Of course. I'm sure that you're already running your own Steam box. You're probably part of the beta.
I don't have just a Steam box. I have a whole Steam room.
Good. Do you have a Steam engine?
Highlighting Tony's lack of game knowledge there.
So how have you been finding your SteamOS?
I only really installed it to, A, see what the install process was like and have a bit of a play around with it. Because they said on the release that it's only really for sort of seasoned Linux people rather than for general users because the install process is a bit of a pain. So I thought I'd see if it's actually a bit of a pain or if it's fairly easy. And it is fairly easy if you don't mind completely blatting your existing system and starting again.
Right.
But if you want to do something a bit cleverer, then you need to be familiar with the Debian installer, which is quite a bit less friendly than the Ubuntu installer.
Hmm.
Is that just the text mode installer that we know from?
No, it's a GUI, but it does things like ask you which modules of the installer you want to load, so you get various features. And
right, yeah.
Yes, so I did it on a spare hard disk using an easier method. And it's basically, it's quite nice. I did a blog post with all of my sort of findings, but it boots up to Steam in big picture mode and lets you switch to a GNOME 3 GNOME Shell desktop and back. And you can basically do anything you'd do with Debian, assuming the packages are in Steam's repository, because it doesn't use the Debian repositories.
Mm-hmm.
But it's certainly a very nice 1.0.
Cool. Well, as the wind whistles down the chimney on a rather wet and blustery night here in the UK.
A euphemism.
No, that's something else entirely. It's time to turn to Laura. That wasn't a connection between you and blustery wind.
No. Thank you.
How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. I've backed two crowdsourcing things.
Yay. What were they?
One, I don't think I'd done it by last time anyway. One was Robert Llewellyn's third book on Unbound.
Oh, yes. The one that you've got your name in the others, haven't you?
Yeah. In one of them, yeah. And the other one was the Wipe book. on Kickstarter that you pointed me at. Yeah, it just looked quite cool. So it's a whiteboard book.
Right. Yeah, dry wipe book.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, where each page, you could keep the pages, can't you? There's multiple pages, like 50 pages or something.
So that's something, yeah, I'm not sure.
I've not backed it because they keep mucking about with the rewards and I'm kind of backing off until they decide what their rewards are going to be.
Right. So are you saying when you launch a crowdfunding thing, you should be really clear about the rewards and what level they apply at? You shouldn't change them midway through
This is a lesson that many people have learned.
Right. Okay.
And some haven't yet.
Yeah, fair enough. Excellent. Well, there we go.
What about you, Tony? What have you been up to?
Oh, I photographed my last wedding of the year, weekend before last, so since the last episode. And it's all done for Christmas now. Well, I have to do work processing them, but, you know, the last actual day of photography has been and gone.
That's funny. Someone passed me a link of photos of a wedding I went to.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Ian and Hayley.
Oh, Ian and Hayley, yeah. Cuthbertson. Yeah.
Yes, the photos that you did there.
Yeah, I did. Very good. Wow, thank you very much.
Very good.
Well, there you go.
Sorry, I don't want to sound so surprised.
Have some more mulled wine.
Yeah, I will do.
There's a nice picture of you with a big rainbow umbrella.
Oh, I missed that one.
Oh, no, a white umbrella?
Alan was my assistant because it rained and he carried the umbrellas and things for me. I think he might have snuck in one. But, yeah. It was good having a good, faithful assistant.
Keep rubbing it in, Tony. Sounds like a fun packed show.
And now it's time for some news. Nokia are reported to be developing a low-end smartphone codenamed Normandy to run a forked version of Android.
What are they thinking?
Images of the phone lacking the hardware buttons required for a Windows phone have been leaked. I think that's how they've deduced it's not a Windows phone.
Oh, because it hasn't got the Windowsy button at the bottom in the middle. It's a round button.
Oh, is
the
it a bit like
logo.
an iPhone?
Yeah.
And that's a requirement.
I always thought that their agreement with Microsoft was that they weren't allowed to make things called smartphones. So the fact that they're calling it a low-end smartphone, does that go under the radar of their agreement with Microsoft?
Well, apparently they already do one called
Asha,
which
it's
is
not
really,
so smart, really.
Yeah, well, it's really popular in the Far East, I think.
Yeah.
So they said that they think this is going to replace that.
You can buy them on Amazon. The Asha, I think it's a Nokia 101 or something like that.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is like £20 or something. And in Western countries, people buy them as a second phone, as a backup phone, or a phone you go to a festival with.
You really, at that price, you could really be brimful of ashes, couldn't you?
Wow. Have some more mulled wine, Tony.
I think they suggest that they might be trying to replace it with the Android one.
It's a fork of Android, though.
Yeah, but Microsoft can't object to them replacing the Asha because the Asha one they knew about already and they knew it was so popular.
Right.
So
interesting.
Yeah, I think I talked about Nokia last year in my predictions, so
we'll see
how
that goes. For that.
Yeah.
A group of companies including Facebook, Twitter, Google and Microsoft have launched Reform Government Surveillance, a campaign to persuade US and other governments to rebalance its approach to surveillance, taking into account individuals' rights to privacy. And they've written an open letter to Washington, to which the Free Software Foundation responded, pointing out that the reason that the governments can do this is because these companies who've written the letter harvest all of users' data and store it in their networks, which have then been tapped into.
So the argument is, if you weren't capturing it in the first place, it wouldn't be there for them to tap into.
Well, basically, it's your fault that I'm stealing from you. You know,
yeah.
If you didn't have these nice shiny things in the first place, I wouldn't be tempted to take them from you.
If you hadn't put all your money in a bank, you couldn't have had it stolen from the bank.
Wow. Interesting.
Yes.
There's also another website that's uncannily similar to reformgovernmentsurveillance.com called Reform Corporate Surveillance.
Well, yes. Basically, in the FSF's letter, they said, we need reformcorporatesurveillance.com. So someone made it. But instead of making addressing the company saying, okay, we think that you need to reform the way you're behaving, they're addressing it to users saying, you're all idiots. Don't use these things. They're bad. Which is, you know,
use these things instead.
Well, no, I don't think it even says
that.
Yeah,
it does.
Oh, is there?
It's,
oh, okay.
It's a snail or something.
Yeah, it's a phone project, an open phone project.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, the indie phone guy. Yes, that's it. But I mean, I just think it would have been, a more credible response if it actually said to the, if it like mirrored what the companies were saying to the governments by saying it to the companies rather than saying to the users, "Ah, you're all stupid.
It's your fault."
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting stuff.
Mm. The British Library has released over 1 million images from its collection on Flickr under a Creative Commons Zero license. What's the CC Zero license?
That's basically the equivalent of public domain, where there isn't a public domain.
You don't have to attribute it, but it'd be nice if you did, which is what they've said.
And what are these images of?
All sorts of stuff.
From books?
Yeah, like historical things.
Oh, scanned in images?
Yes.
Photos?
Yes.
A lot of it's down to Microsoft, apparently. They did
a lot of the digitization.
Yeah, and then they donated it to the library, and then that's made the library can do their thing. And they're hoping to do more, but the problem is you can't easily navigate images because unless you've tagged them in the first place, you can't really retrieve them very easily. So they're releasing all this data for people to then hack and play with and try and come up with better ways of tagging it or indexing it in some way.
They should just upload it all to Google. I hear they're really good at analysing images.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, let the NSA index it all for them and then
we're done. Yeah.
I'm sure they've got some good search algorithms.
I posted a picture of Sky the other day on Google Plus, my cat, Sky.
Oh, yeah.
Not the Sky.
Not just blue.
My cat.
Not this
and
time,
dear. It automatically hashtagged it as Cataday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's freaky.
Yeah.
Cat recognition algorithm.
If you actually search in your photos on Google Plus for cat, it's just like all pictures of cats, not ones that I've tagged. It knows what a picture of a cat looks like.
And was it on a Saturday?
It happened to be on a Saturday, yeah. So, yeah, there is some correlation between the fact that Alan always posts cats on Saturday.
But even that's creepy that they've realised that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, arguably it's useful because, you know, if I wanted to search for pictures of, you know, my kids or something, I could probably type children and it would find pictures of my kids in my collection, in the same way that if you know, you can type in stuff like, saucepan and it will find pictures of saucepans. It's incredibly accurate, which is why I, you know, jokingly suggested that the British Library do this because they've clearly got the smarts to do this pattern matching. It's scary though it is.
Yeah. Indeed. A report has been published by a group of anonymous security researchers which accuses BT of giving GCHQ and the NSA backdoor access to customers' networks. The report describes the missing piece from the mass surveillance network described by Edward Snowden's leaks. And basically, the idea is that BT, Infinity, Home Hub things are all compromised and backdoored and giving people access to things they shouldn't otherwise have access to, connecting to a US Department of Defense-owned VPN when it starts up, allowing potentially anything to be tunneled through that if they decide they want to accept the traffic, presumably.
I'm just waving to the NSA now.
Yeah.
Yes, don't you have one of those modems, Tony?
No, I do, yes.
Oh,
yeah.
It's interesting. There's been some reports that this might not actually be as scary as the report suggests.
I thought something like that might appear, but then you know, I'm sure it's all a bit, you know, surely GCHQ would be very keen for something like that to appear.
Yeah.
A guy
called Robert Graham,
yeah,
he's a cybersecurity analyst, has analyzed this a little bit, we'll put his link in the show notes, but he says, you know, the paper contains nothing that is evidence of NSA spying.
That's true.
It's not the first time.
He says, skipping all the paranoid ravings.
Yeah.
None of the technical details show anything amiss.
It does sort of, the whole thing looks very crappy, but then I'm wondering if it's supposed to be like a parody of all the crappy PowerPoints that the NSA did.
Well, Bruce Schneier's left BT.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Apparently. I didn't even know he was at BT.
No, I didn't, but yesterday he left, I think, or he left it yesterday, announced he'd left.
Oh, interesting.
Well, he was their kind of security, not head of security or anything like that, but kind of guru, a consultant, a sort of visionary,
right.
I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Advisor. Ah, there we go. Excellent. So not the first time that compromised equipment's been shipped out to customers in the UK, at least.
Mm.
But that's the end of the news.
And now it's time for the community news. A discussion has taken place on the Ubuntu release list about how upgrades from 12.04 will be handled, given that the next release after that, 12.10 will be handled.
I did get those versions right, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. How upgrades from 12.10 will be handled, given 13.04 will be end of life before 12.10 is. So if you're on 12.10 and you're on 12.10 beyond the lifetime of 13.04, because 13.04 is only a 9-month support, whereas 12.10, the one before it, is 18 months support. If you then try and upgrade from 12.10 to 13.04, you're effectively going from a supported release to an unsupported release, which
probably hasn't been updated for 9 months.
Yeah. So there's a discussion about it, and basically the plan is to let all of those releases be able to be upgraded to 14.04 easily. So normally we always recommend people go, you know, step one release at a time, or from LTS to LTS, but they're saying the conclusion from this was just everyone go to LTS and you'll be fine.
Right.
And this is only because the changes to the support lifecycle in this one instance have caused this effect. It won't happen again, will it?
No, it shouldn't do, no.
Unless they get something wrong.
Unless we shorten the, you know, supported life cycle to like a month or something, or go rolling release or something wacky like that.
That'll never happen. Canonical is forking the GNOME Control Center for 14.04. Ubuntu currently applies a large patch set to the stock GNOME 3.6 Control Center, so will now maintain this fork until the new Ubuntu System Settings utility is ready to replace it.
Yeah, so this, like, you know, as soon as someone says Canonical is forking something.
Oh my god, why don't they give it all back to the community, Alan?
Yeah, what a catastrophe. But I mean, the problem is that we're holding back going to the later versions of GNOME Control Center because we don't need it, and we won't need it in 14.04 because we've got our own new settings control thing, which is the thing that's on the phone, which will be migrated eventually to the desktop by 14.10. But in 14.04, which is the LTS, we need something. So we're going to carry on using the version that we've got, which is a heavily maintained GNOME Control Center. It's not a catastrophe at all. It's perfectly fine. Nothing to see here.
There's been an unofficial Ubuntu One app written called U1 Files, and it's been released primarily for Android, but as it's written in QML, it also runs on iOS, Ubuntu Touch, and Jolla's Selfish OS.
How cool is that?
Isn't QML wonderful? Very.
Yeah, it's cross-platform. Anyone would think it was, you know, chance and happenstance that we chose QML, but it allows you to create these
because you want to lock everyone into Ubuntu, obviously.
Yeah, clearly. Yeah, this shows, like, you know, before we finished, someone has created an app. I think that's brilliant. It's a great example of an app that's, you know, cross-platform on Android, iOS, Ubuntu Touch, and Yola's Selfish.
Yeah.
And it's particularly good because apparently the official Ubuntu One app doesn't run on Ubuntu Touch or something.
Yeah, we haven't done a Ubuntu One file app for Ubuntu Touch yet.
So you could just adopt this one.
That would be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That'd be pretty awesome.
Yes. M. Deslaw, I'm going to say that name.
Mark.
Mark Deslaw has blogged about Trusted Helpers, the mechanism by which Ubuntu Touch will allow users to explicitly control which data their apps have access to. And it's really cool. I like it a lot.
I do too.
What's cool about it?
Well, because when you install an app on Android, you get a big list of permissions it wants. No explanation as to why it wants the permissions. And then you either have to say, yes, I want it to have access to my address book, my internet, and be able to turn my phone on and off and tell who's calling me. Or you have to say, no, I don't want to install the app.
Whereas, so of course you say yes.
Of course you say yes because you want the app.
Right.
Whereas this is going to have a mechanism whereby when an app, when you poke a function in an app which needs to talk to, say, your contacts database, it'll talk to your contacts app, and your contacts app will say, okay, select some contacts, and then the app will only be able to access the contacts you've selected. I got that right?
Yes.
Yeah. So
it's kind of on the fly permissions almost, exactly, rather than having to say up front everything.
Yeah.
It's really neat. Do you think it'll slow things down?
Slow from a user point of view of being able to do something?
Yeah, because you've got this extra layer between you.
I don't think so, because, I mean, the permission you're providing is that's the file I want. So you'd still have to do that. If the app had permission to access your whole contacts database, unless you wanted to spam all of your contacts at once, you'd still want to say, oh yeah, that's the one I want.
That's true.
Yeah, so for example, if you wanted to run a chat app, to chat with your friends, you might want it to have access to your friends, but not your work colleagues. And so you could say, you know, tick all of your friends rather than say the whole address book, including, you know, everyone you've ever met. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. I think that's the end of the community news. And there's one more item. this would be good. So, Tony, enlighten us. There's some more news, gaming news.
Okay. Yeah, well, Pixel have thrown their hat into the Steam Machine ring. And they've done something really quite interesting with the form factor on this one, I think. Okay. You find.
All right.
Right.
Yeah, so it's basically the size of a 42-inch TV. So it's a PC in a very flat case, standard PC hardware. Right. Very flat case. The idea being it can be mounted behind your TV.
Instead of like being a box under your telly, it's behind your telly.
Yeah, it's the behind the case thing. It's basically a standard PC in the very novel case.
Right.
And it's really, I think, a case of Pixel throwing their hat in the ring early to ride off the back of the recent SteamOS release. Obviously, you can install anything you like on it because it is just basically a PC. So you can stick a bunch of
standard PC components. It's not like a console.
No, it's you know, user upgradable, I guess, as long as you can fit it in the form factor. They've got quite a bit of room to play with, though, so it can fit a decent recent generation GeForce or Radeon GPU in the case, along with plenty of storage options as well. So it'd make a really good thing, something like a Myth TV box or a Xbox Media Center, XBMC, for those of you who don't know what that is. So you probably see quite a few of these cases coming on the market, I think, once, assuming this is successful, prove its point, and you know, you'll see quite a lot of these coming.
Does it say whether it comes with a controller or anything?
They haven't mentioned controller. They haven't given detailed specs out of just exactly what's under the case yet either. But you could use a USB or wireless controller from Xbox 360 or something like that. They're well supported in Steam.
Okay. When are they shipping?
Well, 1st January, according to the website, so not in time for Christmas, sadly. But
be interesting to see if they manage to ship them with SteamOS on.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Do you know how much they are?
About £600, I think. So, you know, not cheap.
Ooh, more than an Xbox.
Yeah, more than an Xbox. But
yeah, it's more powerful than an Xbox.
That's true.
It's the size of a 42-inch TV. So
it does. The pictures I saw, it looks like a One U server.
Yeah.
What, flipped on its
flipped
on its side?
On its side, yeah.
It's a 42-inch TV. Ours is 32?
Yeah, 32.
That's a big computer.
Yeah, well, you're
pretty thin.
The other thing is
really
it,
massive.
It sort
really
of it sort of concertinas out so that like if your TV is wider, then you can still have the ports all the way to one side of the TV rather than having a big gap behind it. That's quite
rather than having to reach right round the back of the telly.
Stop showing off, Mark.
Did they say? What, I mean, you mentioned GPUs. Did they say what GPU is in it?
No, but they said it could go up to an NVIDIA Titan GTX 780, and you get a whacking SSD in there as well, up to a terabyte of storage, you know, which is quite a lot these days.
How much difference do you think that will make?
Well, I think it's going to make quite a big difference, to be honest. I mean, you know, it'll still leave plenty of room for things like The Witcher 2 or Max Payne 3.
How are you getting on with Max Payne 3?
Well, to be honest, I'm leaving it to other people. It's a bit too simple for me.
What about The Witcher?
The Witcher is a bit scary, so I'm leaving it.
Wow, fantastic.
Yeah.
Never knew you had it in you for gaming news.
Oh, you never will again. Right, there you go. That's the end of the gaming news for this year. Cheers.
Right, this time last year, as it was our last Christmas show, we made some predictions about what was going to happen in the coming year, which is now the year that's just gone.
Yep.
Yeah? Excellent. Are you following me so far?
I think even when you listen to it, it'll still be the year that's just gone, won't it?
Call in for next week's show.
Right, no, so we're going to go through last year's predictions and find out whether or not we were right. So
let's buzz through these.
Are we going to do our own, or should I read up?
I think you should read out what Alan said last year, just to embarrass him.
Right, the first thing Alan said was, there will be an Ubuntu phone available to buy in the shops in one last Western country.
And was there?
Our survey said.
There we go.
Oh, dear.
He also said, after work done to get Ubuntu on the Nexus 7, 1304 will be released and will be measurably and anecdotally faster, more stable, and more power efficient than previous releases.
I think that's right, but I don't know.
All right, then we'll give you that one. Yeah. Measurably by somebody.
He said, no new features will land after feature freeze in 1304 and 1310. Brackets, less confident about this.
I think
There were no.
We didn't have any yeah. like. Oh no, they've dropped new icons on us in the last minute.
Nothing major then. Nothing proper. No. So we're saying that one came true.
Yep.
He also said the number of Linux games on Steam will increase from 1.8% to 20% of the Windows games by the end of 2013. So at the time, there were 1,814 Windows games, 336 OS X games, and 34 Linux games.
Okay, where are we now?
No idea.
We've got last week's stats.
Not that many. There's 250 odd Linux games.
Right. So not 20%.
No, not 20%.
A 50% success rate there from Alan. Yeah. That's not bad going.
Yeah. Well,
okay, so
moving on to 33%. Tony.
Tony said Adobe will make Creative Suite or just Photoshop able to run on Linux.
But it's on the cloud now, isn't it? In browser,
that doesn't
so
count.
Maybe it works.
No, don't give me.
It doesn't.
You'll have to watch a 30-second advert when you log in or unlock Ubuntu or pay a premium ad-free version.
I think this was still a good prediction.
Yeah, that's not in yet.
It's landing in 1404 LTS.
Nokia will ditch Windows or go bust.
Now, there's a little bit of debate around that, I think, because they did get majorly bought out by Microsoft.
Yeah.
So they would have gone bust otherwise.
That's a bit of a ding.
I think you get a ding for that.
I'm in charge of
and
the
also,
controls.
Incidentally, 2 years ago, Tony said ButterFS will become the default file system in at least one distro. Well, it hasn't in terms of desktop distros, but the Yola phone ships in shops with ButterFS by default.
Wow.
So
you get a ping for that.
I will take that. I can't believe it's not ButterFS.
Go for it.
Laura, what were your predictions? Well, the first one is that Dell will stop shipping Windows pre-installed at all in favour of Ubuntu and selected other Linux distributions. Did that happen?
No. Not quite.
Not as such.
Oh dear. What, did they stop shipping Windows at all?
No. Arguably, they stopped shipping Ubuntu in some places.
But I bought an Ubuntu Dell, so...
Yeah, that makes it all right.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Next up, John O'Bacon will get an iPhone and will start writing music apps for it.
No, he doesn't have an iPhone. He has an Ubuntu phone as his only phone.
Wow. Really?
Now that's towing the company line just to the max.
Yeah. And I've been there when the phone didn't ring. his wife was calling him and he was getting annoyed with it. So, yeah, I know he definitely has one.
Definitely has one and is experiencing the pain to go with it. Mark Shuttleworth will appear on Dancing on Ice in a bid to get mainstream recognition for Ubuntu on tablet, mobile phones, TV or microwaves.
That's a good one. I think maybe next year.
I like that one. And to be fair, he did get mainstream recognition for Ubuntu.
Yeah.
This year, so I think that's a little bit of a beep.
I think the key thing there is the dancing on ice.
Yeah. Well, obviously, that's the funny part.
Right, yeah. Okay, you didn't really mean that. Okay.
Not going well, Laura, sorry.
That's all right, I don't expect to.
Do you want to tell us what Mark predicted last year in all of his wisdom?
Yes. Amazon Search will be removed from the Dash Home Lens by default, still available as its own lens/opt-in, and... Is this the same or the second one?
That's part of the same one.
RMS still won't be happy.
Okay, that wasn't just a general prediction.
That wasn't just the second one.
General prediction. 2013, RMS won't be happy.
So did Amazon Shopping Lens get removed?
Nope.
Windows 8 will fail to get much traction. The remaining people hanging onto XP will upgrade to 7 and stay there for as long as possible.
In my experience,
I think
that's quite
that's
true.
Probably
there's
a
probably
ding.
A ding there.
Yeah,
isn't there?
That's a ding ding.
Yeah. Well done.
No.
A AAA game title will be released simultaneously cross-platform, including Linux, Ubuntu 12.04, and perhaps something made by Valve. This has got double highlighting on our notes.
Yeah, because Mark left a comment because we weren't sure if that actually came true or not.
Well, I think we decided it did. It wasn't.
Let's ask Tony.
Yeah, Tony.
Well, I think. I don't want to spoil the tension, but I think it did.
Okay. Then.
Yeah.
Which game is that?
Dota 2, I think.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah, Defense of the Ancients.
Yeah.
So that wasn't quite.
Used the acronym because I'm a bit more familiar with it.
Okay. Sorry. So that wasn't quite simultaneously released, but the Mac and Linux versions came out a week after the Windows version. So
that's
I think that counts.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Good enough.
And 2 years ago, Mark said, someone will write an open source H.264 plugin for Firefox and HTML5 video will standardize to that. Nothing to do with Mozilla. And we reported on this a few weeks back from Cisco.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So I was right.
I thought I'd throw that in. So every time I go back and review these, I go back last year and the year before. Going back further and further. In 1980, Tony once said... Anyway...
Well, well done, Mark. So who won that then?
Well, I think Mark got three.
Hey.
You got... I got two.
I got one.
Tony got one. Two.
Tony got two.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think Mark won that. Well done.
Oh, well done, Mark. Who'd have thought?
So then what we need to move on to our predictions for 2014.
Chocolate roll.
Tony, do you want to start with your predictions for next year?
Okay, people, pin back your lug holes. Here it comes. Microsoft will cut its losses and scrap the Surface, which is its tablet thing.
You mean, well, it's already doing that. We already know that.
No, that's
well,
Surface RT.
Oh, okay, the Surface Pro as well.
Yeah, all of the Surface line. They're going to give up on tablets. They decided it's not worth the hassle.
Interesting.
Okay. They're going to go back to beige boxes.
Okay.
That you carry around in a big case. So, yeah, I think I'm going to do that. It's not working for them. Windows is a rubbish touch interface. It's confusing when people have a laptop and you smash at the screen with your fingers and it covers all it right, in all jam. Right. In my experience. Canonical... those lovely people at Canonical will continue their trend of forking random bits of Linux infrastructure and decide to write its own kernel because the Linux kernel just isn't quite right.
I think we'll use right. Are you gonna say we're gonna use Herd?
No, they're gonna write their own.
Okay, well, just completely from scratch.
Yeah,
or fork something.
Yeah, they're gonna start with not fork. Just gonna start.
Start from
basically
scratch.
Canonical, if Canonical builds something, it's better to start from scratch.
Right. Yeah.
To get rid of all the old cruft.
Yeah.
So they're just gonna start from scratch.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. What else?
That's what they're gonna do. The British government will block legal websites because they have some smutty imagery they don't like.
Well, we already know they're gonna do that.
They already have done that. The Daily Star, Daily Mail. All of those,
it's all gonna be blocked. Mm. Anything, well, not just smutty newspapers, but yeah, anything that like might be slightly misconstrued, drug sites, information about drugs, that sort of thing. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's all this is bad. Bang, there we go.
Okay,
safe prediction.
But at least all of our children will be safe.
I haven't got any.
Our cats will be safe.
The cats will be safe
from seeing, getting upset by online images.
Mm. Yeah, and finally, it'll be reported that the NSA and GCHQ have broken SSL or compromised it in some way. They'll bet maybe they have the backdoor keys to all of the big CA's certificates. Basically it's worthless.
Right. I like
interesting.
That.
Yeah. Right. Those are my big four.
Okay. Laura, your turn. What do you predict for 2014?
So based on past experience, I'm not very good at predictions. So I asked on Twitter what people thought.
You outsourced this part of the segment to Twitter.
And my tweeps came through.
Good.
So I've got, there'll be more tablets than laptops.
Where?
What,
on the Isle of Wight?
Possibly. It was from Andy at the sea.
Right, thought so.
Which means there will be a tablet.
That's really deliberately vague. I think you're going to get a ding next year for
more tablets than laptops. In the world, let's say. In the world.
Okay.
Node-RED and MQTT will take over the world. Now, that's a slightly IBM-centric one, but it's valid because it's open source.
Okay.
That was also from Andy.
I have no idea what either of those are, so chances are we'll talk about it in the next
MQTT
season.
MQTT we've talked about before.
Yeah, I'm blocking it from my mind.
Okay. Node-RED is quite cool.
Tony's being a waitress. And,
he is. He's pouring more mulled wine for us.
Mulled wine. Yes, keep it going.
JavaScript apps on the Ubuntu desktop. I quite like this one.
QML uses JavaScript, doesn't it?
Yeah, so that's interesting. Yeah.
That was from Andy Loughran.
Okay.
Go on.
And so do Cordova apps.
Yep.
So we've already got that.
Yeah, no, we don't.
So it's
not really.
Dead cert then, isn't it?
Oh, not on the desktop. No, okay.
Specifically on the desktop.
Okay. So on the desktop.
Yeah.
Right.
Thank you.
It's all right.
Sorry.
So MongoDB will replace Couch. I assume that means... in
as
Ubuntu
the preferred...
for the Ubuntu One stock that uses Couch, doesn't it?
No, not anymore. No, it's U1DB.
Yeah.
Or maybe it'll replace that as well. Oh, yeah.
Because despite what Stuart Langridge said,
SQL
databases do have their place.
Yes.
Okay, so that was an Andy Loughran one as well. And final one for Mandy. It says, Node WebKit and MongoDB providing network-attached apps. And I've got no idea what that one even means.
Great. So we'll file that for next year. Awesome.
Next year we can find out if two people called Andy on the internet are wrong or right with their predictions.
I registered that.
Go on then, Mark. What are your predictions for 2014?
I reckon that the success of SteamOS will drive NVIDIA to greatly improve its Linux support and therefore make them the de facto standard for high-performance graphics on Linux.
Aren't they already?
I mean, it seems to be a six of one, half dozen of the other between them and AMD.
Oh.
Really? Yeah. I thought everyone who wanted a high-power machine bought NVIDIA already.
I don't. And there was the whole Optimus thing where they released...
Oh, yeah,
and
they got a middle finger from Linus. Yeah, okay.
But I think that the success of SteamOS will make them say, right, we're going to be the choice for SteamOS and we're going to make sure that we're the best supported...
On Linux.
On Linux.
Okay,
and then no one's going to buy AMD for Linux anymore.
Okay.
Mm, interesting.
I'm going to predict that I will be using Ubuntu as my main phone OS by the end of the year.
Well, anybody could say that and just...
I was going to say, that should actually be mine.
And I will be able to do everything that I can currently do on my Android phone.
Oh. Even Tiny Death Star.
Oh, okay, that's bold.
Not everything that's possible on an Android phone, but everything I currently use my Android phone for, I will be able to use that Ubuntu.
Please tell me you only use your phone for listening to music and making phone calls.
I'm apparently not making phone calls. If Jono's experience is anything
to go
by.
Not making phone calls to Jono's wife.
Yeah.
Well, I currently don't make phone calls to Jono's wife.
Let's just get that clear.
That's 50% way there, then we're done. Awesome. What else?
Finally, I think that the top five distros on the DistroWatch ranking at this time next year will all still be using X by default.
Ooh.
So no one will have switched to Mir by default. No one will have switched to Wayland by default.
Interesting.
Not even Ubuntu.
So
what are the top five? Just so that we can record them.
No, sorry. At this time next year, the top five
that are...
What's
this time
next
year?
Okay, for record, right now, the top five for the last 6 months, Mint, Debian, Ubuntu, Mageia, Fedora.
So
hang on.
So I'll say if...
Mint, Ubuntu, Debian, Mageia?
That's the one I don't recognize.
Yeah. That's Fedora. Used to be Mandrake, I think.
Yeah. Ah, right.
Okay, Mint.
Debian. So say Ubuntu were to make it its default, by that prediction, you mean it wouldn't be in the top five?
either the ones which switch won't be in the top five anymore, or the ones that are currently in the top five will stay in the top five, but none of them will have switched.
Okay, interesting.
Is Ubuntu working towards having it as default in the next LTS?
Don't spoil his prediction. He'll change it.
Okay, then. So, Alan, using no internal knowledge from Canonical whatsoever, what
are
your
predictions?
That was
hard, actually. Yeah, I was going to say everyone will be running Ubuntu on their phone and tablet by the end of the year, because I know that's true.
On their LG phone.
On their, insert brand name here, phone. We'll edit that in later. Let's try so to I trip look like up. I predicted it. Yeah. No, I'm not saying the company name because I'll be fired. So the ones that I predict, some mega corporation will throw a patent case at Canonical.
You mean megacorp as in Google? Apple,
I mean someone big and not just a patent troll, someone who's got
someone
a library of patents that they're throwing around, like, so, you know, the companies that throw thousands of them out every
day. So that would be Canonical has arrived.
That would be good, yeah.
Yes, first they laugh at you, then they fight you.
Exactly. So that's my first prediction. The second one is Ouya Mark
Ouya.
II. Ouya. Mark II will be released and will flop worse than the first one.
So you were just telling us about how fun it is to play, but you still...
I told you how fun it is for two games that are exclusive to that platform to play.
I see.
Yes. But I reckon they're planning on a second generation. I don't know nothing about it, but I suspect it will arrive in 2014 and it will flop badly.
Okay.
And finally, I predict Linux Mint will switch to Debian permanently.
Right. So they currently have a Debian edition. You think that will be the only edition?
I think they will throw out Ubuntu and only use Debian as their base for future releases of Linux Mint, and they won't continue to have an Ubuntu-based version. I think that's my prediction.
Mm. Well, there we go. Join us this time next year to find out if we were right, wrong, or just indifferent, or if we just forget to have this segment again next year. there we go. Fun predictions.
And Dave Hills from Surrey Look has sent us a command line love.
Ooh, thank you, Dave.
He says, grml-rescue boot. Have you used it, anyone?
No, but it sounds brilliant.
It does, doesn't it? That's what I thought.
I think I have. but go on.
Okay. So he says, it allows me to download an Ubuntu ISO and boot the ISO from the grub boot menu. He uses it for reinstalls when he breaks Ubuntu and to install pre-releases for general testing. The really cool thing is that during the grub boot process, you can edit the grub command line and replace quiet splash with to RAM, and this loads the ISO into RAM and boots it, and you can imagine how quick that is.
Wow.
So installing Ubuntu from RAM also reduces my install time to 7 minutes 29 seconds.
Whoa.
For a rotating hard disk. Which is absolutely superb. No more mucking around with USB sticks and DVDs. Just torrent the ISO, check MD5 some, sudo cp the ISO to the directory, and update grub and reboot.
Right, so instead of downloading the ISO, finding a disk, burning it on the disk, booting it off the optical media, which is slow and worry and takes time, or trying to find a USB stick that you haven't got something on.
That's big enough
and using the right tool to make the ISO into a bootable
USB. The right version of the right tool.
Yeah, to make the ISO into a bootable USB stick and then booting from that, which is still slower than doing it from the hard disk. It's just boot straight
from
the
ISO. That's quite cunning. Yeah. I mean, it's a very specific use case that you already have Linux and working Linux and grub on the machine and you want to boot from something else. But it's good for trying stuff out as well.
The other thing as well that I often find myself doing is, if I ever want to mess around with my partitions, I have to download a live gparted ISO and then stick it on a USB stick. Whereas if I can just always have it sitting there and just boot into that ISO.
Yeah.
The other thing that I've used something similar to this, but not this. I'm not quite sure how I did it. I think I've fudged around with the grub config, is to boot the ISO image for firmware updates for my laptop.
Right.
Oh.
So the firmware update for the ThinkPad, it comes in the form of an ISO image, and I plopped it in a directory, and now when I go into my grub menu at the bottom, there's firmware file listed, and I can boot from that and then firmware update my machine. So, yeah, there's a few use cases where that might be quite handy, actually. I like that.
Excellent, particularly if it follows a symlink, because you can have a symlink and just change where that points.
I suspect that wouldn't work.
It won't work
for me anyway, because my home directory is encrypted, so it would fail.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Thank you, Dave.
Thanks very much.
So over the last year, Tony's inserted little stings into the show, and these have caused some furore from our listeners who have loved and hated them in equal amounts.
Yep.
Partly because Tony keeps threatening more quizzes, and we haven't had any quizzes for a long time. So I thought we'd have a new quiz, which is called "I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of This Ubuntu Pointless Pod Busting to One."
Is there a theme tune?
No, there isn't a theme tune. But if someone wants to write a theme tune and sing the theme tune. Send it in, and we won't play it. So the way this is going to work is very much like Blockbuster. Tony is in a team all on his own, and Laura and Mark are in a team together, so they can confer. But when you let me know your answer, you have to tell me that is your answer, rather than just blurting your stuff out and then saying, yeah, we did say that. Whereas Tony doesn't have anyone to confer with.
Why is that?
Because
you always win.
Because you'll win anyway.
Basically, I don't win, so,
so that
it's a pity pairing.
There would be a paradox. If we put Laura on the same team as you, you would both win and lose at the same time, and we couldn't have that. So I have some prepared questions that I came up with. By half of them came from the show notes for this show, which will be given to Mark and Laura.
Laura writes most of the
exactly.
time.
The other half came from a game that my children have. It is a Doctor Who quiz game. And there's like 100 cards with Doctor Who questions on, so I stole a load from that. So, bit of quiet, please.
If Tony doesn't know an answer, do we get to have a go for a bonus point?
I'm going to score as we go, and I'm not going to tell you how the scores work.
It's just like you.
No conferring for Tony, and please, audience, if you could keep it quiet, thank you. We'll start with Mark and Laura. How many separate interviews have we done for UUPC?
Ever?
Yep. Now, I'll let you be five either way of the right answer.
How many episodes have there been? There have been about 100.
Talk into your microphone.
Sorry.
Yeah, conferring, you can confer into
the microphone. Okay, we can confer into the microphone.
Don't spend all day on it.
So there'll be about 140 episodes.
Don't look it up.
No cheating.
We did have a big list of them at one point.
Yeah, it's been updated recently. That's why it's at the top of the list.
I'm going to... And we did...
I would go with what you're saying.
We did one every other episode this season, which would be about 20. So I'm going to guess we've done 65.
Okay.
That's our
answer. Is that your final answer?
I think so. Laura hasn't given me an alternative. Laura,
is this ever, you say?
Yep.
Total.
About 140, what you said originally.
No. That's too many, because we don't do one every episode. And that
you can't actually just look up the answer. That's actually cheating.
She can.
Because we've got to win somehow.
So are we saying 140?
You're going to look up the answer in your brain.
Yeah, we do.
Yes, and that's the point of
the
quiz.
Yeah, about 140.
About 140.
Is that your final answer?
Mm-hmm. Final answer.
The answer is 125.
Oh, you're still wrong.
I made that deliberately wrong because I knew you'd look it up.
I figured you must have been messing with it.
Yes. Tony, over to you. Yes, no point so far. Tony, in what year did Peter Davidson first appear in Doctor Who?
Which year did Peter Davidson first appear in Doctor Who? To the best of my knowledge, he didn't have any other roles before he took on the Doctor, so I will say 1981.
Ding! Correct. Oh. Tony,
what's
one
that
correct
got to do with
answer.
It's a Doctor Who question.
the any other roles before.
Well, if he played somebody else first, like Colin Baker did.
Okay, anyway, moving on. Mark and Laura.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What project was Phil Hands interviewed about? Stop looking at the thing now.
I'm looking straight at you.
Phil Hands.
That is a real name.
Was it Own Cloud? What do you think? We can confer.
I must.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't think it was, actually. I think that was Frank somebody. But I can't think what else it would have been.
Yeah.
Okay, then. Any other suggestions?
No.
Okay, I'm going to guess Own Cloud.
Okay, I'm afraid it was Debian UK.
I don't even remember Phil. That interview. I don't think it was here.
Phil Hands.
Yeah, we've interviewed him twice, I think. Okay, over to you, Tony.
Yo.
What does the Sixth Doctor wear on his lapel?
A badge of a cat.
Oh.
Ding.
Yeah, ding. Tony has two correct answers. Mark and Laura.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
At Linux... Stop looking at the document.
I'm just finding where we are in the show.
At Linux World Expo in 2008, we conducted interviews with three people. Ryan Osmek, Simon Riggs, and Taras Balog about their respective projects. Can you name one of their projects?
Oh, I can.
Was one of them one of the Novell code dumps?
The chuck the code over the wall and run jobs.
The folder one.
iFolder.
Maybe.
No, that was before. I don't know. It might have been.
What year was this, sir?
2008.
Oh, no, it could have been iFolder.
First year of the show.
That's when we went.
That could well have been iFolder.
Yeah, let's go with that.
I'm afraid the answers are Joomla, PostgreSQL, and OpenNMS.
No points there.
Yeah. Tony, which famous model did the Doctor get engaged to?
Model. Engaged. He's supposed to have married Marilyn Monroe. She's an actress
as well. She's not a model.
She modelled, but she modelled for Playboy.
As you well know.
Is that your final answer?
Go on then.
Yes, you're right. It was Marilyn Monroe. Another correct answer for the Doctor Who podcast. Okay, Mark and Laura.
Yes.
Who have we interviewed most on the show and how many times?
It's got to be Jono. Or no, hold on. It's
two people, and I'll let you get either.
Oh, it's
of them.
Either Jono or Ack. I remember.
You said there were two people, so it could be both of them. I think we've interviewed Matt Ravel a few times, haven't we? Stuart Langridge more.
And how many times have we done him?
Three.
No. Is that part of the answer? How many times?
No, I'll give you a bonus point if you tell me.
Okay, I reckon. How many seasons have we done? Six. I reckon Stuart Langridge six times.
Or at least five.
Let's say five times.
Okay, so you're saying Stuart Langridge and five.
Yes.
The answer is Jono and Ack. And it is five times. So I'm going to give you 2 points for that, for a bit of catching up there.
Hang on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I told you. I'm not going to tell you how the points work. Tony.
Oh, just for the benefit of the listeners who don't know, Ack is Stuart Langridge.
Yes.
So we were right.
Tony, what is the title of the story set on a pirate ship in the 17th century?
The Curse of the Black Spot.
Yes. Well done.
It's all the easy ones.
Mark and Laura. We frequently interview non-Ubuntu projects and distros.
Yes.
I'll give you a point for every distro that's not Ubuntu that we have interviewed.
Crunchbang.
Yes.
Mint.
Mint, yeah. What's the...
We can see that on video. Are you going to tell me Mint? Because I might take a point away for that.
I think you did.
Not Mint.
Fedora?
Sorry?
Fedora? I'm sure
Are you giving me that as an answer?
Fedora. Debian we have. Debian UK, we interviewed.
Is that an answer?
Fred.
Is that an answer?
Phil.
Fred, Phil. Come on, is that an answer?
Yes, Debian.
Okay, you get another point for...
Hang on.
Does OpenSUSE build service count as OpenSUSE?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
No.
We don't give that answer.
That's not the answer. Then.
There was those two guys who did the
Irish.
Yeah, them. What was it called?
You were the two Irish schoolboys who are now still doing it and it's really cool.
Yeah. Keep going.
Xubuntu.
No.
What? Zubuntu.
I'm sorry, we're running
Zubuntu.
Zubuntu. No.
We definitely interviewed them.
Keen Ubuntu or something.
No,
you're just saying words now.
Have you? Is that all you've come up with now?
Yeah.
I think we're running out of time.
No.
I'm gonna have to hurry you.
No.
Okay, we're out of time. So you got Crunchbang and you got Debian. What you didn't get was CentOS. Karimba Singh, we interviewed from CentOS. Oh, yeah. You didn't get Elementary OS, which was.
Was
this
best?
Season.
No,
this
and
season.
The one you nearly got was Zorin.
Zorin, that was it.
Ah. Tony.
Hello.
I think we should get half a point for Zorin.
Half a point because for two Irish school kids. Yeah,
well they did very well.
They did. Who is Darla von Carlson working for, Tony?
Darla von Carlson. No, pass.
Oh, is it a modern one?
I'll throw it over to Laura if you want to answer it.
Is it a modern one?
I'm not answering that, but go on.
Is it the
Who does Darla von Carlson work for?
I don't actually know, but is it the guy who collects Daleks?
No. That's Henry Van Staten.
Yes.
Okay, no. The answer is the Daleks.
see, I was close. I said Daleks.
Mark and Laura, there's an opportunity to pick up two more points here. We often talk about hackspaces and makerspaces on the show. Representative from which two hackspaces have been interviewed by
Dublin.
Us?
Dublin. Because I interviewed him. Yep. A London one as well.
And Manchester. I thought we talked to someone from Manchester, didn't
Possibly.
We? But apparently there's only two. So are the two in there somewhere?
Two of those.
Well, tell me what they are. You just rattled off like four towns.
Dublin and Farnborough.
I talked to the ones in Dublin. That was the first time I heard of hackspaces.
Dublin and Farnborough.
Yeah.
I'm afraid it's
Farnborough, Surrey.
Dublin and London. London hackspaces. We spoke to John T. Waring.
We also spoke to Anton from Southampton.
Yes.
Southampton, yeah.
Okay.
But that wasn't on Alan's list.
That wasn't on my list. I'm going to give you a point anyway.
No.
Tony. What's the name of K9's introductory story?
I would say the invisible enemy.
Yes, well done, Tony.
The thing with the giant prawn.
Mark and Laura.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
With whom was arguably the most drunken interview we've ever done with?
You. Oh yeah. No, you did the interview.
Maybe. No. Who were we interviewing?
Who was drunk?
Yeah. No, I was drunk.
You were drunk and you were interviewing someone.
Yes.
Oh, I don't remember that. I've blocked that out. I think I just remember the babbling afterwards.
It was at Alan's house.
It was at Alan's house.
Hence the drunk.
In the kitchen.
Oh, this is another one. Oh, well, that way maybe better, yeah.
That wasn't an interview.
Which one was more drunken?
No, the one in Alan's kitchen wasn't an interview. Okay. It was just babble.
Right. or an episode, as we like to call it.
Yeah, we've got tighter since then. Yeah.
Okay, well, the two answers I had were Saif Lotfi and Robbie Williamson.
Robbie Williams. Yes. You really were drunk.
Is that Robbie Williamson from Foundations?
Yes.
Right, as he was.
Oh, yeah, the one where Davey was, yeah. Fun. Yes. Tony.
I don't remember.
Back over to you. What do you call a single member of The Silence?
A silent.
Yes. Well done, Tony. Mark and Laura. In season 5, we interviewed two projects about computer game related topics.
When, sorry?
In season 5, we interviewed two projects about computer game related topics. Name the games.
One of them was Nikki and the Robots.
Oh, yes.
Correct.
And the other one. Ooh.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't, I don't think.
Computer game.
Computer games, computer games.
Game.
Thanks for listening.
Oh, Theme Hospital.
Yes. Correct answer. Well done. I would have also accepted...
I got that. That was me.
I would have accepted Corsix TH as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, that's the real
the
name.
Project. Yes. Tony, back to you.
Yes.
What is the first Doctor Who story set entirely on a spaceship?
Edge of Destruction.
Yes, correct answer.
Did you say the first one?
Who knows?
Yeah.
Right, Mark and Laura, using your combined brain power, we have interviewed a few people about talking about taking control as opposed to proprietary web apps, taking control of your data. Yes. Can you name all of those projects that we have interviewed?
Diaspora.
Diaspora, OwnCloud, Synchrony.
Eucalyptus, is that one?
We
talked to Davey about it, and he works on it.
Okay. Ubuntu 1 is sort of proprietary-ish. Have there been any others?
Owning your own data. No, that's Diaspora again.
Do we know how many there are?
Oh,
it's 5.
That one.
StatusNet. StatusNet.
Yeah, there was that one that looks like Facebook, but not... It kind of worked well, but it looked kind of...
Diaspora?
95.
I don't know what that is.
We interviewed a guy about it.
You're listening to the Ubuntu podcast.
Okay.
Right, we're running out of time.
I can't remember what it's called.
Well, you got three of them. Synchrony, OwnCloud and Diaspora. The other two I was looking for were BuddyCloud.
Was that one I was
probably
describing?
I think so. Like a message.
Oh yes, I remember that. Yes.
It was sort of
I actually also put OpenStreetMap on there as well. Okay, Tony, back to you. I suppose I should give you 3 points, but I think I've already given you those three, so it's loads more points. Tony, what year does the Doctor crash land the TARDIS in Amelia Pond's garden?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Ooh. You have to work it out.
Right, so she was 19 when he came back, which was supposedly in 2010. And she was 6, I think, Amelia. So that's 13.
Did you say 12 years?
Yeah. So, 12, 13 years. Yeah. So I'm going to say...
I've got to take the questions while I can.
Let's say 97.
So close, Tony. It was 96.
Oh, okay.
Oh, dear.
Oh, well. Yeah, I was right ballpark.
Well, no.
and, but you're way off.
Final question for Mark and Laura. It's your chance to win this because Tony's got way more points than you have. Which is the only lug to have featured in an interview and who was the interviewee?
An interview?
Yes.
Oh, one of our interviews, not just
generally. Remember. Yeah. We're not talking about Doctor Who now.
Oh boy!
Context switch here.
Interviews.
Ooh,
which lug?
Lug.
Did we talk about and who did we talk about it with?
Was it? Oh dear. No, that's not really a.
Do you remember when lugs were a thing, Alan?
I do.
Burglar.
No, I don't know this.
Oh, let me think.
Okay,
you haven't got long because we're over 2 minutes already.
Let Laura think.
Could be a while.
You are on the radio, just to...
Yes.
Yeah, I'll keep talking while I'm thinking and I just don't know what the answer
dead
is.
Dead air is a crime.
No.
I'm going to guess and say Hampshire, but I don't think it is because I can't remember the interview.
The answer is Cumbria Lug.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Dave Schwuck. Murphy.
Der Schwuck.
In, I think, our second or third episode.
Yeah.
And it was at my house, wasn't it?
On your settee.
Well, no wonder I don't remember.
It's fair enough. I think I was learning Pearl in the corner.
Okay, so Tony, your final question.
It's before we gave you a microphone.
Which story featured a sky shark?
A Christmas Carol.
Correct. Well done. So, at the end of that, I'm a celebrity, get me out of this Ubuntu pointless podbuster to one. It's a draw. Or thereabouts. Thanks very much for taking part. See you again next year.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If there's something you think we should talk about or someone we should talk to, tweet at UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. And remember, if we don't hear from you, we might not have enough content. And that can only mean one thing, more quizzes.
Now it's time for the feedback. And there's a new podcast in town, and they sent us this.
Linux Luddites is a show where we try out all the latest free and open source software and then decide we like the old stuff better.
More than just news and releases, we check out a wide range of Linux distros, cover your feedback, talk about obscure command line programs, discuss burning issues over a pint, and much, much more. So join me, Paddy.
And me, Joe, every 2 weeks for news, reviews, comment, and generally being grumpy at linuxluddites.com.
Linux Luddites. Because not all change is progress.
I'd listened to one of their episodes today, actually. It's really very good. It's,
but you were mentioned in it.
Well, that wasn't the reason I listened to it. It was quite good. Anyway.
I like their taste in music, too.
I don't. Mm. Jezra emailed about uploading files in Ubuntu Touch.
From a developer's standpoint, it would be great to visit a bug tracker website and be able to upload a screenshot of a UI bug that one has encountered on the mobile device. File upload has been part of the HTML specification since the late 90s, and there's no reason to leave this functionality out of a system just because the system fits in one's pocket. P.S. Mwah! I love you all.
We love you too, Jezra.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was talking about the HTML being able to upload files. We talked about, you know, the
browsers can't yet.
Yes. Interesting.
Mm. Yeah.
And Acer emailed us about our command history discussion.
The solution is switching to ZSH. Unlike Bash, ZSH, or Zedsh, saves immediately to the history file. Also, check out the GRML's ZSH, or Zish, config. It's incredible. It makes Bash feel nearly as clumsy as the Windows command line.
Interesting. Mm. I've never tried ZSH.
No, I've seen lots of people raving about it and sharing complex config files that make everything, like, really fancy and
awesome.
Like Ursi, then.
Cool.
So Campbell Barron also emailed and mentioned ZSH or Zsh, and that's just the wine.
I always say Zedsh.
And sent us a couple of links to possible solutions, which we'll stick in the show notes because they were far too long to read out.
Awesome.
Excellent. So Thank you, Campbell. Like that's the way to go, ZSH. There is a solution, and it's Z-shaped.
Right.
If you want to maintain your Bash history.
or your not Bash history.
Well, your command line history.
Yes.
Mm. Excellent. Well, I love it when people actually email in and listen to, like, command line love and come up with suggestions to some of these problems. And
yeah, it means less quizzes. Fewer quizzes.
Fewer quizzes.
Fewer quizzes.
That's a callback to episode one, I think.
we had another one as well, but it just, stupid Google Drive app wouldn't work. So James Lewis emailed in and he said he recently had to research the X34 file system to address an issue at work. And so when he heard our comments about the file create time in Ubuntu on our last podcast, he actually knew the answer.
So you can find out when a file was originally created.
Yes.
Ah,
so he said, historically, Linux file systems have not supported the file birth time, but realizing that it's a desirable thing, Theodore So actually added it to X4. However, as he said in a post on the subject, it's not really as simple as all that because it requires updates to many other projects, not least the kernel VFS and glibc to update the stat syscall so it can return that value. And I'm not sure that can be done without breaking existing apps. However, the data is there and you can get it. And he goes on to explain how.
Oh,
thought it was quite interesting, so it was worth including.
Yes. Yeah, excellent.
Came in today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and thank you for all your feedback over the course of this year.
Yes.
That's all for this episode, and indeed this season and this year of the Ubuntu podcast. We will probably, maybe, be back in 2014, subject to confirmation.
May sound quite so enthusiastic.
Oh, yes, we have to do the team curry, don't we?
Do the curry.
Yes. Yep, we have to bond and...
I'll bring a power supply.
Right. Bring your Ouya. Well, anyway, hopefully we'll continue bringing you up to date with all the latest news about Ubuntu and free software in the new year. If you celebrate Christmas, I hope you have a great one and enjoy the New Year celebrations as well.
Yes. If you really want us to come back, then why not drop us an email and make us feel loved?
Yeah.
Can you all please stop talking? I've got a train to catch.
Oh, yeah. So if I don't play the outro music for a bit longer, does that push things a little bit further?
It's not stressful at all.
Okay.
See you all next year.
Bye. Merry Christmas.
Bye.